This podcast is brought to you by Deepbridge Capital LLP. Deepbridge is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Please note that investments discussed are both illiquid and high risk and won't be suitable for all investors and should be considered as part of a diversified portfolio. The content of this podcast should not be construed as financial or taxation advice. We recommend investors seek appropriate professional financial advice. Any views expressed may no longer be current and may have already been acted upon. Hi, I'm Andrew Aldridge.
And I'm Olivia Drinnan.
Welcome to this Deepbridge Discovery podcast.
On this podcast today, we're delighted to be joined by Christopher Caldwell, who is founder of United Renewables. Hi, Chris. Thank you so much for spending the time to speak to us today. We are so excited to talk to you about all things renewables today. Just before we do, please may you introduce yourselves for the listeners.
Sure. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak. Very exciting. And great to be invited on to your super fun podcast. So my name is Chris Caldwell. I'm a CEO of a company called United Renewables, and we primarily do renewable energy development. We do wind and solar, work on some hydro anaerobic digestion, and our greatest partner in all of this for more than a decade is none other than Deepbridge Capital.
Wonderful folks
to be working with over all these years. But yeah, I was out for a bite to eat with Ian Warwick, your CEO, a couple of weeks ago, and by coincidence, up flashed on his phone something from over 10 years ago,
right,
which was the first breaking of grounds of the first wind turbine we did together.
Wow.
It was more than 10 years ago. It made me feel very, very old, but actually very, very proud of what we managed to get done over the years. We built together a lot of really great, really high quality wind energy assets. And that particular turbine, it's gone through the entire cycle from us finding, discovering. So what we do in our kind of day job in the development side of things is we find sites.
Yep.
We sign up kind of land leases with them, with the owners. We get the planning. We do all of the drawings. We do all of the wind resource assessments. Then we go back to your team in Deepbridge, discuss the economics. If we can get over hurdle rates, we then build. And we build, we look after them, we care for them, we optimize them. And then as time goes on, we do things like we might repower them, which is the next, the current project that we're working on together is kind of repowering these turbines, taking down smaller ones, putting in bigger ones to be increasing the output. And that particular turbine has gone through the entire cycle. It's gone through the, from that just being like a piece of dirt, nothing on it, to being fully formed turbines and then being sold, successful exit for Deepbridge investors. It's been, it's been a great story, and one of many that we've managed to share together over the many, many years of working together.
I was going to say it must be about a decade, but obviously it's over a decade now. So yeah, absolutely. So
I'd like to formally apologise for a decade working with Ian.
So that was breaking ground. So we had been working together on getting to the point of breaking ground before that, and that was a decade ago. So we're all getting old, Andrew.
Speak for yourself. So Chris, how did you get into the renewables industry? What's your background and how did you get into this world?
Yeah, so I started out my corporate life first as an economist, no jobs in that, obviously. So so then went into law, as you do, and was a corporate lawyer for a couple of years. That was all fun, but I got a chance to do an internship in an investment bank. And the internship was supposed to be 3 months, ended up being like 10 or 11 years.
Right.
So, and it was specializing very much in infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And as time went on, I became more and more interested in the energy system. I spent a lot of time traveling the world. It's one of the great things about a career in investment banking is that you do get to do an awful lot of travel. You get to experience, to have a lot of super experiences, get to see a lot of the world, get to meet some fantastic people. But over time was noticing the impact. We're in the world that we live in kind of UK Ireland context, it's a bit of a bubble. Mm-hmm. You get it into kind of less developed parts of the world, you see the impacts of climate change an awful lot more starkly, and could even be seeing that 10, 15, 50. And I also spent a lot of time over the years in Island nations, from Ireland. I've spent a lot of time in the Isle of Man, and I've spent a lot of time in Island nations over my life. And seeing, like, Barbados is one of the examples, a place that we spent every summer there for mm-hmm. years and years and years, and seeing the impact that climate change was having on that particular part of the world was starting to bother me again. Like, I was having, you know, I had children, and kind of got to the point of, I'm now a senior banker, you know, was yep. running a desk for a kind of major bank in London, corporate finance. But really, is the kind of the chasing after the quarterly profits, is that really all there is to life? Because yeah. there's a lot, don't get me wrong, there's an awful lot that's really interesting and challenging and stimulating about best banking. It is a good career. But fundamentally, you're not building anything, you're not producing anything.
Okay.
And so I was thinking, is there not more to life than this? Could I not be trying to make more of an impact? So, like, this, rather than just moving capital from one project to another, could I not be actually trying to build something? So I thought, okay, I will go. So I headed out, did an MBA, and then after the MBA, sat back down again and said, no, I'm not going to go back into investment banking. What I'll do is I will start a business. And okay. I will start a business, which is renewable energy, starting out with single stick wind turbines up in Northern Ireland. Quite shortly afterwards, met Ian, met Gareth, met Kieran, from your team, and we've been working very closely together to be developing out those assets over the years. So it was kind of a slow but sure kind of twisting round and reevaluation of what you wanted to do with life. Mm. And I've never regretted it. There was a few very hairy moments in the first years where you're wondering, like, what am I doing?
I think all founders will say that at some point during their journey of setting up their own business and doing something new and going out on a limb. So I think, yeah, a lot of people agree with you on that. Absolutely.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. And even, like, wait a minute, the printer needs ink? What's going on here? This was always fixed for me.
Absolutely.
The little things.
Remembering to make sure there's milk in the fridge, things like that. That's all the little things which go unnoticed when you're in a big organisation. Yeah.
And how was it? I mean, we've been speaking to a lot of kind of people that have really close relationships with our lovely board. You mentioned Ian, you mentioned Kieran and Gareth. How was it that you actually met the team? Because when we've been speaking to other people, it just feels like it's almost like fate that these kind of stars aligned and the relationships went from there. But it'd be interesting to hear.
Yeah, it was a friend of a friend was at an EIS conference, met Ian, mm-hmm. And the friend said, oh, you need to meet Chris. We sat down, we had a cup of coffee and thought, you know what? We could really be doing something really cool together. Because there's a great complement between, you know, the EIS, the life science technology business, which is really exciting and really kind of high growth potential, but high risk, high reward. And the really boring renewable energy infrastructure stuff, where it's low risk, it's low reward, but it's very consistent, and it's very, like, you know, within a pretty fine band what income is going to come from this. So there's a really nice complementary really nice synergies between the two parts of the business. So we then started to look at whether this was something that could work in AIS. It did work in AIS at the time, and that was our first project together. So our first couple of projects together were EIS focused renewable energy businesses. And in fairness to the government, they were right to take renewable energy out of EIS.
Yes.
Because this is not EIS should be risk capital. It should be stuff that's it shouldn't be infrastructure. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
I know they need to be telling you this, but yeah. So it was out. It now goes into kind of different kind of other tax efficient structures. But it is a really nice fit with high risk, high reward investments, and really boring infrastructure from any sort of balanced portfolio approach to your your investment community.
And from our perspective, obviously, renewables is now the mainstay of our estate planning service. And, mm-hmm. For a business relief proposition, the reason we love renewables is, the term that I like to use, it's boringly predictable. Mm-hmm. We know roughly what wind speed should be like. We know roughly, we do know what subsidies we'll get, etc. So the actual income flow into the company is very straightforward and very simple. And, that's why we think for that kind of market, you're not going to be doing high risk investments for business relief propositions. It is about steady returns and doing the boring bits. And mm-hmm. I'm not saying what you do is boring, because it's boringly predictable. It's what we're saying for our investors.
I would love it to be more boring.
Just to bring that to light for people, I think that the average age of our investor in a business relief proposition is around 82 years old. So it is people that are investing to kind of just get the inheritance tax relief and access to capital. But it's just so interesting hearing from, okay, that was the start of the relationship. You met the guys, you met our lovely CEO, Ian, and then that leads us on to today. What is your kind of day-to-day as DeepBridge's lead development partner?
So yeah, day to day. So, what are we doing today? Today, we're talking to you guys, of course. After this, getting onto a call with two of my colleagues on the anaerobic digestion plant, and we're looking at various kind of optimization strategies on that, and looking at we're going through kind of line by line on the costing side of it, and looking for more ways of trying to maximize the performance of that plant. Then we're going to have a conversation with one of our kind of planning team on a couple of repowerings. So we're taking down some of the turbines, assuming we get planning permission, which we're confident we will. Yep. Some of the turbines that we built. It's now possible to be taking them down and be putting larger machines onto the same site. So we'll increase the productivity on that. And that's the next meeting. And then we're also looking at later on this afternoon, have another meeting with another colleague who is finding much larger sites for us in Scotland, for us to be developing at big solar projects as well. So that's my day, trying to push on with it. So one part optimization and one part repowering. So that is a kind of optimization, but it's kind of not. It's kind of a hybrid optimization and development. And then another part, pure development. We're looking at on new opportunities. There's bigger opportunities in the world that in the renewable energy world, there's a lot of pressures to be going larger. Mm-hmm. So that's the next stage of our development is, our collective development is working on much bigger projects. And that's what we're doing now. And exciting times.
Following on from that, Chris, I think one of the key things is what themes are you seeing in the wider market? What's going on in the renewable energy space? And I'm conscious of time here, so I can imagine you can talk for hours on this, but what key themes are you seeing and kind of what does that mean for you and for DeepBridge's investors, I guess?
Okay, so the single biggest thing is that the energy transition is inevitable. It is happening. We all at the last COP, and it has been something basically since Paris. The world has agreed that the energy transition is happening. That we're moving from fossil fuels to renewable energy. That's happening. And the last COP, it was agreed by 198 nations that we're transitioning away from fossil fuels into renewable power. That is the same. So that is the one single biggest thing. Now that is a very complicated. Then what's a simple headline is how it actually works is very, very complicated, because we've rewired the entire system. Our entire system is based upon kind of fossil fuels. It's based upon from the times when we transitioned away from kind of wood and whale blubber, we've been using fossil fuels for our energy. Yep. So everything needs to change in a very short period of time to get us to a world where all of our energy, will come from renewable energy sources. That's repowering. That is rewiring. That is repurposing of everything that we do.
Right.
It is hugely exciting. There's an enormous amount of work to do. We're under a huge amount of time pressure to do it as well because of the impacts of climate change. So there mistakes will be made. We need to be very careful about the impacts. So there'll be winners. There'll be losers. There'll be people who are left behind that we need to make sure aren't left behind, because that causes social unrest. But we need to make an enormous, an unprecedented transition in a very short period of time. We're being empowered by AI. We're being empowered by the Internet of Things to make all of this happen. And I can go into that if you want, because that's obviously something that is going to be of interest to the more tech side of DeepBridge, but maybe for another podcast.
maybe a different time. But it is fascinating to understand kind of how wider technology is influencing your market. Because we see it within our portfolios, etc. And you were talking about repowering wind turbines. Turbines themselves are getting more efficient year on year, and as technology improves, etc., which has got to be a good thing. So Are you seeing that change in technology across what you do and across the wider market?
Yeah, hugely. So, like, it's what AI and Internet of Things is doing. It's allowing, what we do, it's allowing us to be far quicker and more efficient in the planning process. So, okay. We know, so it looks at the various geological structures of the land, and says where you should put it, maps the wind onto that, and maps solar onto that, and it designs a system in seconds. And wow. That's something that would have taken us weeks to do previously.
Like, absolutely. You'd have had to have surveys, you'd have had to have people on the ground, I guess, historically, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so you just throw the data in, and it produces something out. Now, it's not always perfect. You do still need to have humans going out and adjusting it, but it gives you a super place to start. It's also very good for when you're looking for birds. So, like, if a rare bird comes in, you can have AI that says, okay, slow this turbine down, it's coming your way. You know, these different things, which can help you with the planning side, too.
Amazing.
In the wider scale of things, we're moving more towards everybody will be a generator and everybody will be a distributor of energy. Mm. So we will all, at some point, quite soon in the future, have solar panels in our houses. Sure. We'll all have electric cars. Electric cars will be plugged into the grids, and the grid will be tapping into our batteries and using it to balance itself. Like, this is, we are all part of this system, and this system is growing. And all of that is made possible by Internet of Things and by artificial intelligence. Well, no human could be controlling all the system. Yep. It's all this that data management is all being done. It's our transition is being made possible by the big leaps forward in technology.
So on a social level, is obviously you predominantly work across the UK and Ireland. Where do we sit in terms of global leaders or in terms of adoption of renewable energy? And also on the social side, is there a risk that other countries will get left behind and we'll end up with energy issues in other parts of the world?
Yeah, so we do need to have the transition does need to be just and fair. Renewable energy policy across the British Isles, it is a massive mix. So you have Scotland, who are genuinely world leaders, like they're phenomenal at it. As in, if you ever drive around Scotland, you see wind turbines everywhere. Mm-hmm. Now, increasingly, solar panels are going to be everywhere. The next exporter of energy, sells a huge amount of energy into the UK and then across to the international into Europe. It's a very much a oh my goodness, I see I've just set off a fireworks.
It really added complimented what you were telling.
Scotland's amazing.
If anybody's watching this rather than just listening to this, Chris basically just set off a firework image on his phone that he's recording this on. So yeah, that was brilliant timing. That was just for our Scottish listeners there, Chris. That was excellent.
Just as Scottish listeners, and now I do not know. Is there going to be a storm cloud coming up when I talk about that?
Who knows? Let's see what happens. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, but okay. South of the border, we've got a little bit. You got a different story. So when you had a point in time where there was a huge potential for England to be a leader, like David Cameron came out and he said he wanted to be the greenest government ever. And a couple of years later, when he had a backlash from that, and he said he's going to drop all the green crap. And from that point forward, there has been literally no planning, no ability to be building anything really south of Scotland, south of Hadrian's Wall. Okay. Yep. It's been enormously difficult to do. In Northern Ireland, we had a great start. We had the renewable obligation certificate, very high, which is a very attractive subsidy, very high wind speed, and a local population that was very supportive of wind. So it wasn't easy, but it was an environment you could work in. In the south, south of Ireland, they've now put together a really solid national development plan, which has renewable energy at the heart of it. Mm-hmm. And that is something that's very common. Like all throughout the European Union, they're doing that. China, interesting stat. China last year built more solar panels in 1 year, and deployed more solar panels in China in 1 year than the USA has done through its entire history.
Wow.
Like there's parts of the world which are storming it. India has got enormous, like a fantastic plan going on, really transformative. Same as Japan. Like if you have a look dotted around the entire globe, with a couple of very small exceptions, the Inflation Reduction Act in the USA, another great example of people retuning their entire economy towards this great opportunity. Because the energy transition is, to my mind, the greatest wealth opportunity, creation opportunity of our generation. Like it is, we are changing the entire way that we create and move energy around. Like that is an unbelievable opportunity. Mm-hmm. And big chunks of the rest of the world are leaning very heavily into that. Basically, like the entire rest of the world. Like, so England is a bit of an outlier right now. So, Republic of Ireland, again, there will be some super opportunities coming in the Republic of Ireland, something that we are working actively with your team on as well, trying to assess sites, build out sites there with the new subsidies that are coming and the very attractive kind of planning regime that they're putting in. And interestingly, that's also being copied. I think might be a little bit of a harsh term, but it's being... The Northern Ireland is taking inspiration from the South and putting together something that looks and feels quite similar. So the opportunities in Northern Ireland are again about to really ramp up again. So again, it's really exciting, kind of working in that part of the world and also in Scotland. Come the next election, there's some making the perhaps rash assumption that there will be change in government, but Labour had some very strong policies on renewable energy. They've pulled back quite a bit on them in reaction to a movement further away from them from Mr. Sunak. So we'll have to see what happens when Labour does take government. But one part of the policy that they have that have been consistent with, arguably the only thing they've been really consistent with over time, is they're going to reform the planning laws.
Okay.
And to be honest, if you can just do that one thing, if I could wave a magic wand and say, you know, Prime Minister, whoever you may be, change one thing in the UK to allow us, and that's just get out of our way. Just make the planning laws similar to what they are in Scotland and the Republic of Ireland, in basically in most of the rest of the world. Make it a positive assumption that says that wind turbines are a good thing, solar panels are a good thing. You need to have a really good reason to say no to them. You do that, make that one change, the opportunities opens up, the free markets and developers like ourselves, capital providers like yourself, we'll get into there and we'll be able to do stuff. Just get out of our way, and the markets, the economy, will just sort that stuff out. So, please, Prime Minister Sunak, Prime Minister Starmer, whatever, please, one thing, stick with that, change the planning laws, make us all very happy.
Yeah, well, I'll be voting for you for government, I think. What, just out of interest, sorry if I'm coming across naive, but what is the situation with the planning laws? Like, what's the kind of challenge there?
Okay. So the planning laws. It's so planners throughout generations, and for really good reasons, have been told you should not be building tall vertical structures in rural areas.
Okay.
Because nobody wants a skyscraper in the middle of the countryside, and that's and that's completely fine. We understand that. But when you have a look at wind turbines are tall vertical structures in rural areas, but they're fundamentally different to buildings. They're fundamentally different to habitats. They're a part of a, to my mind, like a quite an attractive looking ecosystem that protects the environment around it. So like you're much better off having, you know, 20 wind turbines than you are having a coal-powered power plant in terms of the health of that environment, the look, the feel, and the health of that environment. So what's the, what say Scotland have done, is they said, we understand, you still can't build skyscrapers, but wind turbines we recognize are entirely different in nature. And wind turbines are something that we want to be encouraging, we want to be building. So you need to have a really good reason to say no to it. Okay. While in the UK, while in the South, in England, they say basically you just can't do it. Like you know, they make no difference between a skyscraper and a wind turbine. So it's just you just can't do it. Like, you know, to all extents, sense purposes, you just can't do it. You need to have the entire region rezoned for industrial purposes. So it just doesn't work. But in Scotland, they say, okay, you know, like, are there rare birds around? Fine, good reason. Are there houses close by that might be annoyed by it? Okay, no, that's fine. Good reason. not up there. But if you're in a remote area where the wind speed is good, then yes, okay, just go ahead and do it.
Makes sense.
So there's an assumption that it should be done, that it needs to be argued against, rather than an assumption it shouldn't be done.
I was going to say, it's that positive assumption that, that Scotland have, which in England we don't have.
Exactly.
That's interesting.
Yeah. In terms of what you do in the renewable sector, you touched on it before about planning consent, etc. Other than planning, etc. in England, what other things would you like to see happen? What would you like to see, you know, whether that be Labour, Tories, whether that be the Irish government, you know, appealing to whoever, what would be your kind of wish from them?
Yeah, the second wish would be please invest some money in the grid.
Yep.
The grid infrastructure has been something that has been really, really poured into, as with a lot of infrastructure, like people aren't making the infrastructure investments that they really that we really should be as a nation. But so the grid is one of those things that has been really left behind. Mm-hmm. It needs to be reinforced. It needs to be really kind of if you're upgrading it. The historic grid system has been kind of point to point energy. It's been like a train station where you have one station here, one station there, and a train moving from one place to the other. So big power station, direct line into town, and you know, very kind of simple straightforward grid. Now with the distributed energy system, you don't have one big power station. You've got hundreds, thousands of little power stations.
It's an entirely different concept in that sense. Yeah.
So instead of it being a train station, it's like a traffic management system downtown Manhattan. You know, just cars going all over the place, traffic lights on and off. That's, you need to spend money to make that grid work. Mm-hmm. That money has not been spent in England because they have not been imagining that this is the system that they want, because they haven't been allowing clean things to be built. A lot more money is being spent on that again in other parts of the world. But again, going to, like, talking in the English context, next thing would be please you know, provide us with the infrastructure to be allowing these things to be plugged in, and the energy to get from where it's generated to where it is, and that's the grid.
That makes sense. Mm.
So we've got a lot of challenges, really, don't we? We've got the challenges with the grid. We've got the challenges with the planning permissions that you were talking about. How achievable do you think the ambitious net zero goal is in your opinion?
Yeah, net zero goal is really, really hard to do. Like, it's genuinely, it's really hard to do. An awful lot of work needs to be done. But it's with the political will, it can be done. Like, this is a situation that the Republic of Ireland was in a few years back. And it was a kind of similar type of, like, a resistance and reluctance to be doing things. I don't want to go into the politics of it, but there was a resistance. Stopping myself.
Don't open that can of worms.
But a decision was made to go and make these changes, make the investments, put out a national development plan. A national development plan is going according to plan, which if it does hit its targets, which are ambitious, and it does need a lot to be going in the right direction. One of the things that needs to be going in the right direction is actually interest rates need to be coming down, which seems to be happening okay in a European context, US context, seems to be coming down to a point where investment becomes a little bit cheaper, which means more things will get built. But that kind of outside of their control thing aside, you can put together these systems to allow for you to catch up to an ambitious net zero goal. The problem that Ireland had was that it was about 12 years behind Germany. Okay. In starting out to be doing the thing that Germany were doing. Now the UK, now England, it's actually massively helped by having Scotland there, which are well ahead of most other parts of the world. So in combination, you know, that's a pretty good head start. But if you're talking about England itself, it's probably about 15 years behind, you know, where Germany were. So it's possible. And it was the type of plan that Keir Starmer was talking about, the kind of the Green New Deal type of plan, the plans they were doing, the big green infrastructure deal, is what you would need to do to be able to transform this economy and really just get to the same point that, like, you know, that America's doing, China's doing, Japan's doing, India's doing. Like, you could be getting to the same point with that type of investment. They may well decide they're just kind of playing, taking down the rhetoric on that in advance of an election where they're really far ahead of the polls and they just don't want anything shooting them down. And they may just decide to go ahead and go and do it with and make the same similar types of commitments when they are in office. So you never know, but it is possible to do. Ireland have done it, or in the process of doing it. Other parts of the world have been doing it. America is a really good example. Actually, it's rather than Ireland. The best example is probably the Inflation Reduction Act.
Okay.
So this is. And the European Union as well have come in behind and done the same thing. But if you have a look and see what was done in the Inflation Reduction Act, which is nothing to do with inflation, it's all to do with renewable energy, and the types of kind of tax credits that were being granted out to different parts of the country, the types of legislation that's being put in place to allow for building, the types of infrastructure investments that are being done into grids, into energy storage, and the encouragement of free market capital to go into these areas as well. That only started 2 years ago, but the impacts are enormous already. So yes, it is entirely possible with the political will to go and do it.
So I guess, I've just some notes down here. Basically, it's political will, political power, and driving a real plan. It's a positive planning bias in favour of renewables. And I guess the third thing, importantly, and I guess from our perspective, it's investment. Whether that be public sector, private sector, so things like the Deepish Estate Planning Service, which focuses purely on renewable energy, is part of that mix and important going forward.
100%. Like, none of this happens without investment, without capital moving around. And that's where government can help. If governments can help to de-risk things, if governments can reduce the cost of things by getting out of the way in the planning and the grids, and they can help to de-risk things by giving tax incentives, by giving breaks, this really assists. But the single greatest thing that investors need, that we need as developers, are consistency. It's just knowing that if these are long-term infrastructure projects, that policy will not be changing in the morning. That if we are going and we're making a commitment to be going and building something that will be giving us kind of revenue for 20 years, 20, 25 years, 30 years, that the subsidies will be in place and they will remain there. That's we're not going to be going like 2 years down a planning process and they change their minds and they change all the rules. We need to start all over again. It's just that type of like consistent policy, that solid platform to us be working on. That is what we need as an industry. Please, again, PMs, whoever it may be, just give us a set of rules. We'll work within them. Stop changing the rules. And that's one of the weaknesses of the current government is they've been changing the rules quite a lot.
Right.
And it makes it much more difficult to be investing in this sector, particularly in England, because the rules keep on changing and you never know where you are.
And I think that people only need to look at our portfolio of what we've invested in, and it is today all in Northern Ireland and Scotland, and I guess that's
for sure.
That consistency that we've been investing for over a decade now with yourself and that is a key factor in that.
Mm. Yeah, 100%. And if something like the Inflation Reduction Act does come into England, then that is the Inflation Reduction Act cannot be unwound by the next government if there is a change in government in the US, because it has laid out such a strong set of rules and principles, and people have been investing on the back of it. Factories have been built. You can't then go and shut them down.
Sure.
So the entire kind of infrastructures have been built around this legislation. If a new government comes into the US, tries to pull these things away, there will be like rebellion on the streets because you'd be costing so many jobs. If something that is ambitious gets put in here, it will stand the test of time. It's like the NHS. It's things that you put in place that you can't then be ripping back out again. So like Obamacare again in the US, they changed the government. They desperately tried to take it down. They couldn't because there's too many people relying on it. If we can get the change in legislation in the UK, in England, that under the next year of mentors, that will give the confidence that we all need to be going, oh, okay, brilliant. Here's the opportunity. We can make a real difference, like a real impact in England, in the energy and in the energy transition. That would be wonderful. Please, please.
There we go. So we've got your wish list.
But then not really. Not a lot of confidence in the government. Oh, thank you so much, Chris. That's so, I genuinely could speak to you about renewable energy all day. I think it's an incredibly topical, interesting topic. I'm getting asked questions about it all the time, especially from investors. So I appreciate you being so specific there. But arguably the most important question that we like to finish on is about the Deepbridge dinner party. So if you could invite three guests, dead or alive, but please no family or friends, because I don't want to be getting any aggressive calls after this podcast from your relatives. Three guests, dead or alive, to the Deepbridge dinner party, who would they be and why, please?
This was a really difficult question.
Purposely.
It's so hard, yeah, yeah, isn't it?
How on earth do you go back through the entire population of the planet from the beginning of time? You know, it's extremely hard.
I said to Andrew when he asked me this question, I was like, can I also pick fictional characters? I got
just
really carried
you
away.
You needed more people to
I needed
from.
More, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, I try to stick with the rules. I try to think, okay, well, what do I want? So if I'm talking about, I went through kind of, do I want to be kind of changing politics? Do I want to be like stuffing? So, okay. Stick to renewables. Stick to this industry, stick to this sector. So, okay. And I want to make some impact. So first pick is going to be someone that has a profile that has the ability to, oh, crying out loud again, my Zoom has just put a thumbs up on the page.
It really, it's just adding to your point.
Absolutely.
I think you should continue the thumbs up.
Oh, that one didn't work. Okay. So first pick, in terms of profile, It has to be someone like John Kerry, and probably John Kerry himself, like former Secretary of State, U.S. Ambassador on climate change, like someone who knows everybody, has the profile. If he stands up and he talks about renewable stuff, people listen to him. And also, he's recently retired from that position, so he's out of a job. He's looking for
there
work.
There you go. He's got great. The time for come for dinner. Excellent. We like that. That's good. Yep.
He's got the time to come for dinner. And if he hears something that he thinks is powerful, then he has the platform to be able to amplify and getting out there. And second person thought, well, okay, I'm not going to be, there's so many technical challenges that we have in the entire rewiring and repurposing of the system. Has to be Nikola Tesla.
Okay.
Because, you know, that guy, he was so far ahead of his time. It was, I don't know, aside from, say, Da Vinci, like we haven't seen the likes of him before. Yep. Like, his ideas literally changed the world on like, the world is certainly well of electricity, like his access current or direct current. His kind of vision of kind of wireless technology was so far ahead of his time. It was absurd. So take him here, explain to him what's happening right now, see what ideas it comes out with. Yep. That would be pretty cool.
Absolutely.
And the last person, because I think we're missing a big part of this conversation, and actually, and you know, to my own fault in this conversation, we missed out on one of the biggest parts of the challenge ahead of us, which is the kind of biodiversity. Mm-hmm. And it isn't just focusing in on, and again, entirely guilty of doing that myself, and have been guilty on this conversation of focusing in on the one element of carbon. And saying, no, we need to, we're on a war against carbon. That we're in, what our challenge is to have a sustainable ecosystem, which means we need biodiversity, we need trees, we need community, we need our planet to be continuing to function, which is more than just about carbon. So the last person I was going to invite was Wangari Maathai.
Okay.
Who's a Nobel Prize winner. She was the founder of the Green Belt movement in Kenya, and she's someone who could be bringing, like, she's sadly deceased many years ago now, but she could bring the other side of that. And John Kerry is as bad about it as anyone else. He doesn't talk particularly about anything beyond carbon.
Right.
So we get that insight of the wider worlds, the kind of biodiversity, preservation of rainforest, but, you know, getting communities together. That, I think, that would be a really nice combination of people to be sitting around having a chat, trying to kind of brainstorm on what the world would be like. Mm-hmm. I think it's to take John Kerry to go out and sell us to the plants.
Absolutely. No, that's,
I've got
that's
visions of this dinner party being like a picnic in like a jungle or somewhere, like really, you know, full of nature. And I'm surprised you didn't say Attenborough. I really thought you were going to say Attenborough.
Yeah, Attenborough, he would be amazing. Well, if I had a fourth pick.
If we had the fourth, he could maybe get an invite if he's good enough, but we'll...
and I think, you know, one last pitch for you, Chris, as well. You know, you obviously have your own podcast and your own things. Do you want to just tell our listeners a little bit about that and just, you know, just as your two-second pitch, if you like?
Yeah, no, thank you so much. Yeah, so my podcast is Conversations on Climate. It's on YouTube and all of the usual platforms. And what I do is twice a month, I sit down with a change maker. One of them tends to be a leading academic, and mm-hmm. the other tends to be a CEO or an activist or a politician. Or we just recently had kind of Chris Skidmore on the most recent episodes, Tory MP. And we talk about all things sustainability, climate change. It can be every episode you turn into can be something entirely different. Mm-hmm. So we've talked about game theory, we've talked about civil rights, we've talked about cross-border carbon charges and taxation. Mm-hmm. So we've talked about leadership and about PR, comedy. Another episode, one of the most popular episodes was the role of comedy in the climate conversation. So I'm slightly biased, I understand, but it's really interesting conversations with fantastic people.
It is very interesting, and I think for anybody that is interested in kind of hearing more from Chris, I think definitely go and find that, because it is very interesting.
I'm about to do a long drive home, Chris, and I'm going to listen to that the entire way back.
Thank you so much.
Brilliant, Chris, thank you very much for joining us. It was great to chat through things, and hopefully, you know, our listeners have kind of learned a little bit more about what you do, what we do, and how we go about doing it. And let's pick this conversation up again in a few months' time. And we could, again, as Liv said, we could be talking for hours about this.
So
let's focus on something specific next time and have a good chat around that.
Yes, please. Thank you so much, Chris. Lovely to meet you properly, and we'll speak again soon.
Thanks, Chris.
Right. Okay. Thanks very much. Thanks. Bye bye.
Thank you for joining us.
If you have any topics you'd like covering in future Deep Rich Discovery podcasts, please email us at discovery@deepridgecapital.com. We look forward to seeing you soon. This podcast was brought to you by Deep Rich Capital LLP. Deep Rich is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Please note that investments discussed are both illiquid and high risk and won't be suitable for all investors and should be considered as part of a diversified portfolio. The content of this podcast should not be construed as financial or taxation advice. We recommend investors seek appropriate professional financial advice. Any views expressed may no longer be current and may have already been acted upon.